John Spartan. There is, of course, a well-known and documented connection between sex and violence. Not so much a causal effect, but a general state of neurological arousal. And after having observed your behavior this evening and my resultant condition, I was wondering if you would like to have sex.
With you?
Mm-hmm.
Here?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Episode 201 of the Cult of Matt and Mark Cult Film Review Podcast. I'm Matt.
And I'm Mark.
And make sure to head over to the Facebook at the Cult of Matt and Mark and like us, or head over to our blog at cultfilmreview.blogspot.com, or shoot us an email at cultfilmreview@gmail.com. And if you're hunting for the back episodes, cruise on over to the Cult of Matt and Mark Archive 01, searchable on iTunes, where you can follow the links on our blog. Show news, Mr. Hudson. It's been, what, a month since we got
about
back in
month.
The saddle?
Yeah, you know, actually, I listened to our bonus episode. Did you get any feedback on the bonus episode?
I got some feedback from Will's wife, Nicole.
Oh.
And she very much enjoys our banter.
I thought it was pretty... I listened to it today.
Oh, you did?
I didn't think it was too bad. Actually.
No, it was pretty solid.
I mean, I certainly could have tightened it up quite a bit, but I didn't feel like spending 3 hours doing that.
I just felt that if a German art director, or actually production artist from Los Angeles, likes our podcast, then, you know, I know she knows me, but I thought we transcended the bathroom humor a little bit, maybe. I don't know. Like, we exceeded our demographic a little bit. I thought we would just be like, you know, dimmed down to the 25 to 35 year old dudes, you know, smoking
weed.
You
know where the real popularity is in children's broadcasting. So I think we should maybe clean that up and youth it up a little bit. And we're going to get our listenership up.
Okay.
Because kids love cult movies from the 80s.
They do. That's true. My daughter's huge into it. She can't get enough of shit. What's the Goonies?
Next week will be Jem and the Holograms. Didn't they do an animated movie in the 80s? I know they did a live action one a couple of years ago.
Yeah, they'd have to hump that. I'm sure they'd hump that.
And then I listened to our mini review of the Star Wars movie.
Oh, yeah.
Which was actually, I've become more and more dismissive of since then. We've added on to it. I was vaguely hopeful at the end of that. Now I have no hope for any of the films.
So it's episode 8, A Lost Hope, for Mark Hudson. All right. Well, I don't know, man. You know, to me, the whole Star Wars thing seems like the abused child psychology, right? I mean, you're brought into the world by your pop culture high concept parent, Star Wars Episode 4. And then there was the honeymoon period with Empire Strikes Back. We're like, Lucas really loves me. They love me so much. They gave me episode 5, Empire Strikes Back, the greatest science, you know, the greatest Star Wars film of all time, bar none. And then fucking the alcoholism started. Lucas would come home late from the bar, beat you about the head and neck with the fucking Ewoks. You know, and it was just all downhill.
They're not as soft as you think.
That's right.
Actually rather bony.
That's right.
Sinewy.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. The movies really aren't my best. I enjoyed the movies, I guess. But, you know, my best Star Wars experience was probably the LucasArts game TIE Fighter.
Oh, you know,
that was like the early 90s. That's when I think I really, that's the time I really enjoyed the universe the most.
I think I did too. I think it had companion role playing games, which were great for role playing. Sort of, I guess.
Companion role playing games? You mean working under like D&D version 2 or something?
No. They had their own. They had their own deal.
So did you play some of those?
I read a few of the source books.
We're talking boards and dice sort of game.
Yeah, I may have read a few of the source books. I think Will had a few of those laying around just because he was such a super fan.
I never ran a game, though.
I never ran a game of it, but role-playing game sort of ancillary material I always find usually pretty solid when it comes to pop culture genre. Because it doesn't give too much away, yet it allows you to sort of expand your imagination a little bit. Like if, you know, Game of Thrones had a companion role-playing architecture. I think it probably does by now.
I think there's a... I wonder what there is. Because I remember I read the hell out of the Star Trek Next Generation technical manual.
Yeah. Well, there wasn't a role-playing game with that, though. There is.
No, but I think it has the same feeling. Right?
Yeah.
You could probably use it as the basis for a role-playing game because it sort of sussed out some of the nuts and bolts of the world.
And early 90s was sort of before online role-playing games took off. And, you know, there was a few shining stars in the video game genre of role-playing. But they're kind of few and far between. So this sort of dice and paper games were big.
Well, just think about being back in that day. I mean, if you wanted to learn about what exactly is how do you build a lightsaber, right? Maybe in the books they talked about it.
Yeah, they would.
But right now,
the
you just go on like the Star Trek wiki, right? And they talk about all the fucking crystals and midichlorian juice they put in there.
The all that stuff was, you know, certified, whatever Lucasfilm or whatever. Whatever the parent company of all the Star Wars films were, LucasArts. And so they had to give it like the stamp of approval when they would come up with sort of ancillary source material about fucking some random ass character that shows up in the film for 3 seconds. You know, they have to build out a whole biography.
Fortuna, things like that.
What's that?
Bib Fortuna.
Yeah, that's right. You know, and so they have to, who's the star pilot of the first trilogy? Who the fuck was that guy? Wedge. Wedge Antilles.
Yeah.
So you could go and explore that through the sort of the role-playing material and get, you know, all the backstory you needed
and
more.
As well.
And the fictions. And yeah, it was kind of a golden era back there. In the late
but you had to go, you had to go explore. That's the way you absorbed it. You know, you didn't go, well, I mean, I guess it's not much different from spending a weekend on a wiki for a universe, right?
Yeah, I mean, you can do that now. But back in the day, it was a little bit more.
You had to fucking ante up $20 for the goddamn book.
Yeah, yeah. So,
$20 dollars for the book.
That's right.
It was like 45 today or something.
You know what was funny? I'm not gonna mention his name. I'm gonna rat him out. Although it's been like 25 years, I could probably say. But
rat out
a
your
buddy
dad,
of mine.
It's fine.
No, it's not my dad. A buddy of mine who was my Dungeons and Dragons like sort of companion through my adolescence. Mm-hmm. You know, the guy that I would play Dungeons and Dragons with, and his friends would show up and play, you know, that whole thing. Mm-hmm. And this is back in the day where we would have to mail order like shit. You know, we would have to mail order for any sort of TSR gaming material.
There wasn't even a shop you could drive down to Linwood
for. Well, there was, but it usually had just the cursory level stuff, you know. But yeah, to really get the, you know, back manuals, to get the, you know, the hardcore Gygax stuff that's just out of circulation.
The third monster compendium or something.
Or, you know, just the, like, Descent into the Depths of the Earth.
Oh,
know,
the
module
actual.
D1 through
modules.
2.
Yeah,
to get that kind of stuff that was totally out of circulation, because TSR, to make itself, you know, to keep kids keep buying the shit, they would go to, like, editions. They go second, third, fourth edition. Mm-hmm. I don't know what they're up to now. And we were all about the first edition, which was Advanced Dungeons and Dragons.
Really? Because it was the second edition that really caught traction, right?
Yeah, and it's just, it's cumbersome as shit. Like, the Dungeon Master's Guide, totally cumbersome. I remember, like, oh, I want to grab this orc and I want to toss him off the wall. Mm-hmm. And then you have to go find, like, the grappling tables, and then they were, and there was nothing was sequential. And then about 30 dice rolls later, he's like, okay, you've grabbed hold of him. I'm like, okay, I'm gonna toss him up. Oh, you fail your strength check. Sorry, the orc gets away. We have to start this all over again. I'm like, oh, Jesus. So there was this whole, you know, painful end of it. But we used to play it, and that was our rule book. And so to find the old stuff, we used to have to get, I think it was Games Workshop. Shit,
oh, the
I don't.
Guys who did Magic?
No, I forget.
They might have started as a clearinghouse. So you had to buy like used copies or old.
No, it was a TSR. No, it was a TSR mail order catalog. It's like, you know, online shit today. And so we would order that stuff, but you know, we were like high school kids. We didn't have any money. So my buddy used to pinch a little bit of his dad's stash off of his collection. His dad was a
to make like a dime bag or something.
Yeah, just like over time, because his dad. You know, I mean, his dad. Would have.
Is his dad even alive any longer?
Yeah, he's still around. Yeah, yeah.
Shoot.
And he's.
For theft. I can't imagine the. I think you got to press charges sometime earlier.
Well, when you're as big of a pothead as my buddy's dad was, you can. You just like a little here, a little there. Isn't that much over time? So my buddy would pull a little bit of his raid his dad's stash a little bit until he could get like accumulate, you know, $20 worth of weed, and then he would sell it to his buddies, and then that's how we would buy our D&D shit. Isn't that awesome?
Would he cut it with like pipe tobacco?
No. I was one. No, we all knew what we were doing, but I thought it was funny. It's like he had to sell drugs for Dungeons and Dragons. It was awesome.
So
it was
my
his dad's weed.
So my dad was right that Dungeons and Dragons was a bad thing.
Yeah, man. Turned you into a drug dealer. Fucking Satanist drug dealer is what that shit turns you into. So, I don't know how we got on role-playing games. I think we were talking about Star Wars and how that was kind of the high era.
I was mentioning a review of the Star Wars that I listened to.
Oh, yeah. And then the new trilogy came out and it all turned to shit. And it was whatever. But, yeah. And then I realized that Return of the Jedi is really a rehash of the episode 4 with the new Death Star. And it's just, that's like they've done that movie 3 times now. So, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No. I mean, I think we pretty much nailed it.
All right.
And we are in opposition to what the masses feel about that film.
No, how dare they? Okay, let's get into a film that we all feel warm and fuzzy about. It's our film this week is the 1996 Demolition Man, starring none other than Always Bet on Black, Wesley Snipes, and a untouched up Sylvester Stallone, which I found refreshing. He was still built
untouched
back in the day.
Sylvester,
if you haven't noticed lately, has had quite a bit of work done.
Oh yeah, he's got the ethereal look that so many Hollywood women get by the time they're 45.
Will knew a guy whose sole job on The Expendables was to CGI out Stallone's wrinkles.
Oh.
Like on top of all the fucking face work he's had done.
Like his crow's feet had to go?
Yeah, there's this, like, you know, if you watch Expendables, he looks really weird. And it's because it's a combination of plastic surgery weirdness on top of subtle CGI strangeness that just makes him look like a fucking, you know, Alex Circus puppet. I mean, it's just, is that the guy who did Gollum?
Yeah, Alex Circus.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, that's it makes him look like one of those guys. It's like was he a CGI puppet? What the fuck was going on?
Well, he was 47 at the time this movie was filmed.
Still ripped, man. If I look like
and
that
he was
at 47,
he was playing a 32-year-old.
Oh,
yeah.
Fuck! Could you,
he got 15?
I couldn't pull
they
that
gave
shit
him 15
off.
Years on this one. It's pretty good.
I couldn't pull that shit off. Holy!
He
Jesus.
Didn't look like a 32-year-old. He looked like, you know what his body really reminded me of? Reminded me of The Room and, what the hell was that guy's name? Johnny.
Have we forgot? Have we forgotten so quickly?
Yeah, that the French guy, a Frenchish guy. He's, you know, he's like really ripped, but his skin doesn't really look young any longer.
Right. It's sort of mottled. You can't hide that. I mean, it's gonna deteriorate. What are you gonna do? Right. So
yeah, he just doesn't have the smooth skin of a younger person.
And you can always tell.
He definitely didn't look 32 though. He was fucking ripped. I mean, and I'm not sure if he was wearing a marble sack or not during some of those shots. It was tough to tell on a DVD copy. I'd really like to see this on Blu-ray, I was thinking.
Blu-rays, there was only a brief stand-in boob shots of Sandra Bullock. There was actually no, there's nothing else. There's not even ass shots, I believe, as Stallone Snipes got out of into the ice bath or out of the ice bath.
It's a little assy as they come in and out, right?
Well, you side ass.
There's the one naked woman on the TV, on the video phone.
Oh, that doesn't count, does it?
It wouldn't count for me.
All right. Wesley, though, I think Wesley, I haven't seen a picture post prison, but I bet you his skin is as smooth as dark chocolate. I bet you he looks like a Hershey's Kiss, that guy.
I don't know. It's a good question. I mean, they're both getting up there. I think Snipes is acting, and he's in like the fourth, speaking of the Expendables. They must be doing another one.
There should be a rule that Wesley Snipes should be in every action movie ever created.
Well, he's going to have to now to pay off his IRS debt.
Yeah, I know. No, once you go into the clink, man, aren't you like free and clear? Sally Mae, those fuckers.
No, they give you fines and they give you jail time. That's the best kind because, hey, you owe a bunch of money and we're not going to make it so you can't earn money. And you'll learn for 4 years and you'll lose every one of your possessions in the meantime as they all go into default.
God. Poor Wesley.
He'll be okay, man. He's working again already, so. Believe me, he'll be pulling in at least several hundred thousand dollars a year before too long.
That the fact that Wesley Snipes went to prison, yet the Wall Street crooks, the 2008 financial meltdown, still walk.
I'm not going to start about Enron or the savings and loan scandal from the 90s.
Yeah, the what Bush brother was responsible for that bullshit? I don't know. Anyway, all right. So let's talk about plot rundown. Holy God almighty, we're like 20 minutes in, no plot rundown. Frozen in 1996, Simon Phoenix, a convicted crime lord, is revived for a parole hearing well into the 21st century. Revived into a society free from crime, Phoenix resumes his murderous rampage, and no one can stop him. John Spartan, the police officer who captured Phoenix in 1996, has also been cryogenically frozen, this time for a crime he did not commit. In 2032... the former cities of Los Angeles, San Diego, and Santa Barbara have merged into a peaceful utopian San Angeles. Unable to stop him with their nonviolent solutions, the police release Spartan to help recapture Phoenix. Now, after 36 years, Spartan has to adapt himself to a future society he has no knowledge about. So, there you go. And then there's the skullduggery of why Phoenix was revived in the first place to go in and hunt out the...
Is this part of the document?
No, I'm just going on. But it didn't mention it.
Skullduggery. It doesn't mention it because that sort of ruins a plot twist.
Oh, did I fuck it up? Nah, it's right there at the beginning. You know exactly
that plot twist?
Oh, yeah.
They don't reveal that plot twist until Simon Phoenix goes in to see Cocktail.
It's not. No. You didn't sniff it out beforehand.
Well, he knew the password. And he knew. Yeah, I mean, you knew something was up. But you didn't know it was Cocktail. Or Cocktail. Or Cock.
No, understood. But you figured out that. I mean, really? You didn't. It took
you a while. I think you knew there was
maybe
some funny business going on. But I don't think you realize it until they run into each other, not in the office, but out on the green field.
Well, there's that.
Well, that's not until the when the hell was that?
I thought there was some other scene where he threatened him but couldn't do it.
Yeah, that was out when he was making his initial escape, and he was at the cash machine, and then they had the fight in the museum where he got his guns. That's where it's, but that's a ways into the film.
I suppose you're right. I suppose you're right. Yeah. It's actually refreshingly obvious. I think it didn't need to be any more Byzantine plot wise than that. So I think
No, the movie's great. I mean, there's not really anything hidden, less to the most dullard viewer. No, this is a straight up action movie with a smart, quick moving plot.
You know what I was realizing what this actually is? It is the duel, if you will, to use a word from electromagnetic theory, of the Terminator.
Kinda. The duel of the what does duel mean?
The opposite, the reflection of the inverse, the
they go forward in time.
Yeah,
but what's Wesley Snipes?
He's the Terminator, man. He's sent from the past to kill some fucker, Dennis Leary's stand-up
Dennis
comedy
Leary's,
routine.
You just can't take those Ford ads any longer.
I know. He's like, God damn it.
God damn it. I'm almost about ready to buy a Ford F-250. I got to stop that motherfucker before I hear another one of his ads.
So, and then looking to pursue the whatever Cro-Magnon from, God, it's only 40 years ago in the film. It's not like that was
36 years.
It seems like there's this it seems like they should have just dialed the history forward to like 200 years from now.
Well, I think I would have made one point of the film more clear to the viewer. The point is, and it's sort of confusing if you don't add up the numbers, is that the cryo prison is a permanent state. People are never let out of it. They mentioned some changes in law to the parole system, but basically nobody's ever paroled. They have the hearings, but nobody gets paroled.
Then what's the point of the cryo prison?
It just keeps undesirables there forever. It's just a place.
Well, then
just
click them off, you know. Just
yeah.
Do
well,
them
I
in.
Mean, there's the I mean, but that's not legal, right? And plus, people would find that distasteful. You just leave them there forever and push the problem down the street. It's a game of kick the can. But they never planned to release these guys.
Was this? This film created under the zeitgeist of the frozen head era of, when people were freezing their heads and bodies. It was kind of big.
Well, you know, I wonder, I mean, did this sort of catch the public conscious back in 93?
Yeah,
there were a few businesses. This is well after people were starting to do it, but there's a few businesses that would freeze your head or your body. God only knows what happened to those bodies. I'm sure they've been long since cremated. They would literally just put your head in like liquid nitrogen, which would fucking destroy everything in it. I think they started pumping it full of glycerol or something after a while.
I just brought up a story from from 2009.
And these places like ran out of money. Yeah, they would try to set up like the money the guy would pay, so it would pay out a yearly stipend. And I think they got caught up in some financial crisis, and they just like ran out of nitrogen.
Don't steal my thunder.
Oh,
here.
I'm sorry. Is that what
but I got a news article.
Go for it.
Ted Williams, who was a baseball legend. Mm-hmm. I'm unfamiliar, but Ted Williams, frozen head for batting practice at cryogenics lab.
Oh no.
Workers at an Arizona cryonics facility mutilated the frozen head of baseball legend Ted Williams, even using it for a bizarre batting practice, a new tell-all book claims. In Frozen, Larry Johnson, a former exec at the Alcor Life Extension Foundation in Scottsdale, Arizona, graphically describes how the splendid splinter was beheaded, his head frozen and repeatedly abused. The book out Tuesday from this is 2009, so it's out. Out Tuesday from Vanguard Press tells how Williams' corpse became Alcorian A-1949 at the facility where bodies are kept suspended in liquid nitrogen in case future generations learn how to revive them.
Oh, man.
Oh, Williams' severed head was frozen and even used for batting practice by a technician trying to dislodge it from a tuna fish can. Say what?
Who knows, man?
There's the poor fucker.
Look, if you want to freeze your head, you got to do it yourself. It's the only way.
I know. There's a great, the Sci-Fi Channel, used to have like messages from the future. They're little interludes like with the ads. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember it, but
no, I don't.
It was like just messages from the future, you know, and it was like these Twitter before Twitter, but it was like a Twitter feed from, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And one of them was, what do you want us to do with all these frozen heads?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Anyway,
nobody's ever going to do anything with those frozen heads.
So, the cryonics prison, I think it's a little Philip K. Dickian. It kind of seems like, you know, put everybody on ice and you find some kind of legal loophole to preserve him. But I thought they were like releasing him after a period of time.
That was the plan. But I think after the Cocteau Revolution happened, after the 2010 wars.
Not the franchise wars, but the
you said things really went to shit in 2010, and then Cocteau came up with his new society that people were so desperate they took and embraced and made a reality, that the idea was that these people would just be left in cryo prison indefinitely.
So I was thinking, is it like, if you're, I mean, let's say a cryo prison was treated as like a normal prison, is there any punishment in just icing you over and reviving you when your parole's up? Like, I mean, you're not facing the torture of isolation for 30 years. You're just like, it's like going under. You're unconscious.
I'm not sure what sort of punishment that is. You would think that people would voluntarily do that.
Yeah.
Of course, like, you probably make some wise investments before that. Oh, you don't have enough for retirement? We'll just let your 401k
that's a great idea. That is a brilliant idea,
And what you do is you pay us 10% of the final value when we awake you.
And just hope that Alcora cryogenics facility doesn't kick your head around.
Yeah, well, there's not a terrible power loss or some sort of epidemic. Right. Where you're not controlled, your reviving isn't controlled. Yeah, it doesn't make sense from a punishment standpoint. I mean, I think depending on whether you think the criminal justice system exists for punishment or rehabilitation, I'm sure it's rehabilitation.
Oh, of course.
Anyways, but there is a rehabilitation aspect to this.
I would say for profit, but
that's a different motive. I can't imagine that this facility, considering the equipment they have to customize there, right? I would imagine that would be a pretty penny. Could you imagine sending some of those pieces, getting all that stuff machined at a machine shop?
I know.
God, the cost would go through the roof.
Yeah. Really fast. And I liked how there was some sort of not invented yet Ice 9 technology.
Oh, yeah. There was a little bead of cold or something.
Yeah. And then... spoilers, folks, was the demise of Simon Phoenix there at the end.
That's right. He did lose his head,
which he alluded to
at the beginning.
There's a few science tropes in film that bug me, and this hit one. And, you know, I don't ask for super realism. Oh, maybe I do. Maybe I'm just a fucking asshole. Maybe I demand science realism in all my films. Trying to think of where I get out of it. I think I'll like the whole hyperspace thing and slight speed and stuff. I kind of let go.
As long as they tell you what the rules are, that's fine, right?
Right, but this is just that you can be instantly iced over, and maybe
It seems internally consistent to this universe in the film.
I guess you're right.
Just some cryogenics thing. I mean, it's obviously dramatic for the film.
Yeah, it's like a Dr. Freeze kind of thing, you know.
I mean,
maybe it works.
Obviously, it's stupid, but I don't think it's. I mean, since they don't try to explain it away, you sort of have to accept it. Otherwise, you're going to be fighting the movie's fiction.
No, I know. I just that you can be frozen within seconds and shattered. I think that's kind of something that bugs me. But, you know, c'est la vie on this.
I guess you can't.
You can't. I'm just saying you can't.
You just can't move the heat that fast.
Well, yeah, you can't. You can't turn something to crystal in a matter of seconds. There's just no way. You can turn things to, like, you can blow stuff apart. You won't make it melt in seconds, but you can, you know, obviously
there would be no
atomize.
Way to force, unless you had something of with negative temperature, which I guess is
even then
that exists.
You could put you into outer space, which is the like the most.
Yeah, but this is no, I'm talking negative temperature.
Oh, okay. So like a super cool bath of fucking liquid.
No,
helium,
it's
whatever.
Its temperature is -800 Kelvin.
You can't go -800 Kelvin.
Oh, there. I think there
Silly
is
boy.
Some. There is negative temperature in certain things. But,
no, there's no.
Not in the class. It's not the class.
No, by definition, there's not. So, you can get like liquid helium will get you down to like 4 Kelvin.
No, look, I know. I'm saying in the sci-fi universe, maybe there is.
Oh, okay. All
right. Right.
Well, just
like maybe they find some exotic matter that's at. I don't know. Like, look, you could have a different. What do you call that? The ground state's different, for that matter, or something.
All right, sure, we can wax on. It's fine. I just to me, it always kind of like bugs me a little bit that you know the insta freeze and shattering your phone.
Oh yeah, yeah. Ice to see you.
Yeah, right. That's right.
Yeah,
exactly.
No, that is right. The instant freeze is stupid.
It's fine. I mean.
In this movie, though, I couldn't find fault with it.
No, it's a, well, okay, this is a good science fiction movie.
If it was, a serious, like, you know, measured science fiction movie, I think I'd have more problem with it. Like, didn't we see this in the, it was supposed to be a real realistic sci-fi movie? Like, maybe some of the Star Trek movies this happens in?
No, I'm trying to think. I keep thinking of this is sort of like a actioner version of Woody Allen's Sleeper. It really is. I mean, it has the same future silliness. Like if you remember Sleeper, they have the orb, which is like the bong that they all pass around.
Oh yeah, that's sort of a sex thing. Yeah.
Yeah, and here you have the three seashells, and
they never explain, right?
No.
Which I thought was I thought that was really smart.
Yeah, no, it worked. Yeah. And
I like him using the tickets as toilet paper.
Yeah, right.
I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah, there was some good stuff. It had like I loved the fact that all the music was 30-second ad jingles.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think the idea of the franchise wars was hilarious.
Oh yeah. Taco Bell.
Every restaurant's Taco Bell. That's really funny.
That they won.
I mean, that's really funny. That's deeply, deeply funny.
And they go in and who is that guy from MTV Sports? Oh, fuck. Who is that? That kind of, I don't know if he was ever a comedian. What's his name?
What scene? I'm not familiar.
Dan Cortez. He was the lounge singer, I believe.
And he was also one of the. I think he shows up two places in the movie, doesn't he?
I'm looking now for Dan Cortez, Demolition Man. Anyway, but he's singing the Jolly Green Giant theme.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which
Land
was,
of the Jolly Green Giant. Yeah. Oh yeah, that's why I remember his face.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No,
Jack
Black
was in this movie.
What was Jack Black?
He was one of the. He was one of the scrap. Oh my God. That's hilarious.
Oh, really? I didn't even notice.
No, I don't think you were meant to, but that's funny as hell, man.
Yeah. And who was the Saturday Night Live guy?
Rob Schneider?
Yeah, Rob Schneider was in it.
I thought the effeminate
sort of manservant. I forget the guy's name.
But, didn't he play the MTV video games generation pack?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. He was in Heather's. I forgot about him. Yeah. No, it had these great sort of caricature players in the film. You know, right down to the Dr. Evil looking head of the police, and I forget his name, but he's been in a ton of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't he in Shawshank Redemption?
Oh, you're right. He was the warden.
Did he play the warden?
Yeah, you're right. He's one of those great character actors you never really pay attention to.
Uh-huh. I mean, I thought this movie was really smart. And also, I thought some of the action scenes were awesome. I thought the action scene in the History of Violence Museum was really good with that two-level fight they have.
You know,
in the floor and then up on the upper level. I thought that was really smart action.
You know what's interesting is, like I said, the problem I kind of had is that they just had just spun it up another 200 years. Because it was funny because, like, 40 years isn't, was that how many years?
Yeah, it's not even a generation. Well, consider this. This movie's sort of the story of Zachary Lamb as well. So I don't know if it's sort of tough to catch. But Zachary Lamb was the black helicopter pilot at the beginning of the movie. And he's also the black old-timer cop in the future.
Oh.
It's the same character. That's why they know each other.
I didn't even pick that up when I was watching this part.
It's really tough to pick up. I only picked it up because somebody mentioned it when they were talking about the film. And I went back and checked. And I always wondered what this experience was like for Zachary Lamb. Just imagine you're like 21 and you're a helicopter pilot, right?
Yeah.
And you go through all this bullshit and then you end up in 2032 in this sort of weird cult-like society. And somehow Zachary is internalized this. Just imagine what that experience. I mean, you can see the fish out of water experience for John Spartan.
Oh, but to actually live
have to go and then absorb that bullshit society.
But he's still sort of
smirking at everybody, like he knows it's all bullshit. But
it's going to be like us during the Trump presidency. You know, if you fast forwarded through that,
what's that chick's name? What's Hillary Rodham Clinton's daughter's name?
Oh, Chelsea.
It's Chelsea Clinton administration.
Chelsea
2030.
Well, it was the Schwarzenegger administration in the film, or at least that was.
They were going to the Schwarzenegger Library. They build the libraries at the end of your administration.
That's correct. Yeah, for whatever reason. And whoever checks out books in a fucking presidential library, I don't know. I've never been to one, so I'm not really sure what's there.
Yeah, you know? I went to the LBJ one, and they were all out of copies of Twilight. I was very disappointed.
What, no, really?
If you ever go to Austin, the LBJ Presidential Library is really awesome. It's basically a museum about the presidency, so they have all sorts of, they have basically things you would expect in a museum, audiovisual displays, a recreation of the Oval Office, and plus they also have the official job of it is they have all the actual hard records of the presidency, all the communications and documents.
Is that what the library entails? Mm-hmm. Just the collection of the hard copies of the administrative.
Yeah. And all copies of the tapes. And if you are, if you are doing research into that administration, you can go there and get stuff.
Oh, okay. All right. I wasn't aware.
But when people go there, it's a beautiful building, by the way. Absolutely lovely. Lovely design. It's more of a museum for the patron.
So I thought it was just like, like you said, I want to go check out my pet goat from the George W. Bush Presidential Library. Where I go that far?
I don't know. They might be all checked out. That's a popular one with the Bush.
That's right. Okay, understood. So there was that joke, which is a little prescient because Arnold Schwarzenegger did become the governor of California, and then scandalized, fucked his housekeeper or whatever. And I don't know. Is that his downfall? I think that happened after he left office.
I don't think anybody gives a shit about that illegitimate.
No, it's weird. Nobody cares.
Well, why should he care? Who cares?
Nobody really cares. Nobody cares.
Another thing I thought was smart about this movie was the language change. I mean, there was sort of a rollback to 60s sort of gollies and gee whizzes, but also I enjoyed the new compound words like trust, confidence, murder, death, kill, happy, joy.
I was a little bit, and I don't want to be critical, and I accept the futurism. I think it was well done and fun in this. The Sandra Bullock sort of robotic. Kind of that's why I think it should have just been set like a couple hundred years in the future. You know, she just it wouldn't take that I guess there's this big upheaval that you're not aware of, whatever. But I was just like,
Look, that's my biggest complaint. I agree that you give this another 80 years, let a couple of intervening generations go by to really get people separated. And then having the Sandra Bullock be sort of the werewolf in Lundred America file, except she's a 20th century file.
Right.
I think is more interesting, right?
Yeah. Well, and only a fan of the late 80s and early 90s, if you noticed, which was funny. There was the Red Hot Chili Pepper Blood mm-hmm. Sugar Sex Magic poster and Lethal
Weapon.
Well,
that would make sense because this was the time leading up to when everything went to hell and society reformed itself. That was the end of a period, right?
So like how I long for the Eisenhower era, maybe, right?
Yeah, maybe so.
I have a little bit of that going on. I mean, my house is very kiddified. If you came to it now, it'd just be full of like bright primary colors and plastic. You know, that's all you'd see in my house. But through that, you will see sort of my affection for the mid-century cocktail culture that my house was built.
This whole, I think. See, you have a. You have a romanticism of the pinnacle of the modern, what do you call it, patriarchy?
Yeah, the patriarchy. Down with the patriarchy, burn your bra, fuckers.
And I think that's a lot of things that men long for.
Yeah, but I don't long for it like in a Trump, Pat Buchanan kind of way. I like the aesthetic. I think it was a pretty... shitty era for anybody who wasn't a white insurance agent, really.
Look, you don't have to impress me. You can long for that, being the top dog. There's nothing wrong with longing for it, unless you're not working for it actively.
No, I know. I accept it as it was. I just kind of like the aesthetic of that era. So maybe, I don't say groovy or Hey Cats or whatever the Sandra Bullock.
Well, that was sort of the counterculture.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess a little bit of Marty McFly. I don't know what would be the lexicon of the 50s. You could pick it up pretty easy, like if you're hanging out at a diner. I don't think it would be that apparent.
But
like
your appreciation would be a real vapid pastiche of it.
Yeah, and I guess that's what the Sandra Bullock character mm-hmm. is emulating, is
and,
that
and,
vapid
I think
pastiche.
It would have made more sense farther in the future, but I still think it makes sense. I don't think it's quite that bad.
I always wonder if we're really depicting the past as we think we're depicting it. I was watching
if we think we're depicting the past as we think we're depicting.
That
sort of circles back on itself. Then.
Yeah, I know.
You must mean something different.
The Orbis of statements.
Are you thinking we don't? What? Could you say
listen
that
to
sentence
me.
One more Flesh, time?
No, let me sketch it out a little bit. Okay. So if there's still a Hollywood film industry in 500 years in the future, which I doubt there will be, but let's say there is, and they want to set a film back in the 20th century, and so they start doing the pre-production and production art. Mm-hmm. Would it be like, and you watched it,
yeah,
like 500 years from now as a citizen of this current decade,
like you were frozen?
Would it be like really weird? Would it be a total jumbled up strangeness? Like, would there be, phone booths yet Teslas in the same frame? You know, would there be just these anachronisms that would just seep through in really weird ways, because they would lump like 200 years into a single era. Like we lump.
Well, I don't think it'd
of,
be quite that bad, but they'd certainly lump a good four decades together, probably.
Like when we set a film back in the 1400s, 1500s, mm-hmm. it's like we're not anywhere near the nuance, and maybe the fashion or the culture of that era wasn't as transient as it is now. But I just wonder, like, would it look really weird, to have few people in the future recreate our current present? And would there be like it would just seem off. Like I said, like you would have these strange anachronisms commingled, you know.
I think you would. I mean, I think that was one of the best parts of, what the hell was that stupid romance one where the guy travels back in time?
Oh, Somewhere in Time.
Yeah, Somewhere in Time, where he gets back in time. He thinks he's been really good with the suit, but the suit's actually like 8 years out of fashion.
Yeah, right. That kind of thing.
That would jump out at you. Like
you'd go back into the Eisenhower era wearing like 80s parachute pants.
Yeah, and you have like an iPod going.
Yeah, and since it was all kind of, 500 years in the future, you just compact 100 years down to a few years, for sake of whatever you're doing to recreate it. It would just seem kind of funky.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I think it would. I mean, it would be, I'm sure some people would do a really, you get the occasional real academic who may, really study it thoroughly. But then who's going to appreciate it? If it's a mass market,
nobody,
product.
And it would be too much money.
Yeah, why would you go through all the trouble? It doesn't matter. All people have to go. Oh, it's the late 20th century. Oh yeah, I know those guys.
You'd be like hunting down like a pair of Ray-Ban Wayfarers for for like a few years in
these
the Wayfarers.
80s. These are the 80s Wayfarers, not the 90s Wayfarers.
That's right. He's like, fuck this. Buddy. I don't know, because if you look at these pictures from that we've dusted off from this archaeological dig. You'll find that the Wayfarers were much more current than you thought they were.
Yeah. Yes. I think just out of who gives a shit, it would be like that.
Right.
Because nobody would give a shit in 500 years, except for the very occasional academic.
Yeah, and you would have to, that guy would be like a total Neil deGrasse Tyson buzzkill. I mean,
that guy wouldn't be making popular film.
No, but he'd be criticizing it on Twitter or whatever whatever Twitter is in 500 years, if there is a Twitter.
Twatter.
So I the fact that there was an archaeological dig under the Museum of Violence or the History of Violence or whatever it was, I thought that was kind of funny. Like, and I guess there was a conflagration and sort of a upheaval and that stuff got buried.
Yeah, basically the whole city got burned for the most part.
But I did find it funny that the insurgency, which I forget their name, the Dennis Leary insurgency.
What did they call themselves, or what were they called?
What were their names in the film? I forget.
Well, I mean, you mean Leary's character was Mr. Friendly.
Yeah, but what was his?
They were referred to as the Scrap, but I don't know what they called themselves.
So they kind of had like a Seattle underground thing going on. So they lived in the...
The old city.
Paved over version of the old century.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, doesn't really make much sense, but yeah.
So, it didn't make much sense.
Probably not the best part of the movie.
No, but there's, in any of these near future kind of 80s, 90s films, there was always this insurgency against the utopia. Like, I don't remember if you remember the Schwarzenegger film Running Man. Old guy and Dweezil Zappa were trying to hijack the TV network's satellite or some shit, and they all lived underground too, and it was sort of this troglodyte version of the utopia above it kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Anyway,
there's two more points I want to make about the film before we go to the review.
Please.
First, I really liked how Cocktails, or God, why am I forgetting how to pronounce his name? How his downfall took place. Miscalculation sort of like led to his death.
And I think it's great. In a fucking fireplace. It was bad.
Well, he just got. I mean, there was a simple workaround to his programming of Phoenix, and that he was blind to it just because, he created the society, but he also bought into it. And so he had trouble seeing the options that were available to somebody who wasn't part of that society.
So do tell the downfall, please elaborate.
The downfall is that Phoenix has been programmed, absolutely a beautiful way, by Cocktail, because Cocktail Industry controls the cryostasis reprogramming of criminals, so they program them to be a super soldier and also follow Cocktail's instructions and not to hurt his person either. It's a beautiful, I'm sure it was very technical, and he carried it out, but I mean, there's just the workaround is so simple. Phoenix says he needs more guys to do the job. Cocktail just gives him more random guys.
Yeah. Picks
him and one of those random guys kills Cocktail because he has them been programmed. Oh. It's just, it's such an easy workaround, but Cocktail was blind to it.
Yeah.
Well, because I think he had, I mean, certain behaviors he was blind to. And I thought that was, and I thought how his unceremonious death was really nice. I really liked how there wasn't a big fight where Cocktail gets a laser gun out, you know, and he just gets killed by these savages because he doesn't understand.
By the other dude.
Him. Yeah.
And then they toss his corpse into the fire, which I thought was
I thought that was really fitting and nicely done. I think a smart bit of writing. The other thing is a loose end that they talk about a bit in the early part of the film, but they sort of dismiss later, which makes me think there was a rewrite, is John Spartan's daughter is never resolved where she is. Oh. And I think in an early version of the film, his daughter was Leona Huxley.
Huxley.
What?
Ooh, yeah, it would have been like an old boy.
It's not Leona. What's her name? Lenina?
Lenina, that's what it says.
It's a weird name. But anyways, that she was actually his daughter. And I think the thing was that they wanted her to make her the love interest. And so they wrote that part out. Because there's just a little bit of foreshadowing at the beginning.
That would have been better.
I think so. But then you would have lost, which I thought wasn't a very good sex scene, personally. Interesting, but not very good. And their romance is just
not necessary. It could have been totally platonic. Oh, I think they missed an opportunity. I would
bet money that that was the case in an earlier version of the script.
No.
But they could not have a love interest in a popular film.
They could. The fuck not, man. You don't have to have that.
Anyways,
shit,
I think that would have been better. So
I agree.
But they don't resolve it. So I mean, they could have resolved it by saying his wife and daughter died in the big earthquake of 2014 or whatever it was.
Well, this wouldn't be the first time that a cryogenically frozen protagonist lost their daughter to bad plot holes. If you remember the Aliens films. You know, there's a.
Look, I like Aliens.
It's actually.
3.
What's that?
I like Aliens 3.
You know, not a bad movie. It kind of standalone. It was okay.
I think it's fine. I don't care about those characters who died. Especially not Newt. Either. I couldn't give a flying fuck about Newt. Now, Michael Biehn, that's another matter.
Michael Biehn, I know. That's. You know, he was on a podcast. I listened to him a while ago.
He was doing some rounds on podcasts because he had a independent movie he did, but I don't remember anything about it.
He was a little bit too. I don't know. I don't think I'd track down a Michael Biehn independent film. I don't think that's me. I don't know who would, but you know,
I don't know. I don't know. Yeah. I wasn't particularly moved by his interview either.
I concur with.
I think
the
he's
whole,
a great. He plays a great good guy. An awesome.
Yeah,
he
does.
He really kills it at that role. But I think that's his thing.
Well, he was a bad guy in The Abyss.
Oh, I don't recall.
Yeah,
that.
He was sort of this Navy SEAL.
Was he good at it? Had,
yeah. Yeah, he was kind of menacing. Hmm. He did well in that role. So anyway, I think your hunch is right, and I'm a little bit disappointed.
Yeah, because it would have been an interesting reveal at the end.
I think it would have. Mm-hmm. You know,
like her records got lost, or she got renamed because her dad was.
Like there would have been something, some hint, but she would. Yeah, like she would like wouldn't have known that.
Yeah, because they made a point to show that she didn't look up the fate of his daughter, only his. Wife, and so she could have been blind to it too. And there's a possible. And remember the police chief steps in to stop the line of questioning. Like maybe he knows that, but he doesn't want to besmirch your good name.
And to be honest, she is like you said a 20th centuryophile.
Mm-hmm. And so it would make sense. Like there's a bit of her father in her, right? She's a bit of a wild card. Doesn't quite fit
in. Is that just a movie not wanting to at all tamper with the whole Elektra complex. Don't want to touch it. Don't want to get near it. Don't want to have that sort of taint of incest or even fume of incest, like, lording over the film at all. That they
I don't think you need to have the incest thing there. I think somebody came and popped and pumped. So they brought in probably another writer in who, you know, put that funny sex scene in there and everybody loved it. And obviously they couldn't have, like, even though they never had sex, couldn't have this intimation of incest. And so just wrote that part of the story out.
Oh, man. If Woody Allen would have directed Demolition Man, it would have been a fucking brilliant.
There's
film.
A couple of Hollywood types.
He could have gone from Sleeper, which is basically Demolition Man with Woody Allen, to Demolition Man. It would have been like an evolution of his time farces. You know, in my opinion, I believe there was a nod to Sleeper in this. Mm. And hear me out. If you've seen the movie Sleeper,
boy, I think I watched it, but not critically, and that was a long time ago.
So there's this escape scene where Woody Allen and I forget who the female counterpart is in that. They go to this cave. And they find, like, a 1972 Super Beetle.
Oh, yeah, there's that joke. That's a funny joke.
And then they just, like, start the fucker up, and then they just drive it away.
Is that the end of the film? I remember that scene.
I don't remember.
The joke about these things will run forever or something.
Yeah, there's some great Woody Allen joke about it. But then there's the scene here where they grab the GTO or whatever the hell, and it starts right up. And goes, you know, I thought that was that just me, or is that, do you think somebody was cognizant of that Sleeper reference or not? But maybe not.
Was there some dialogue that drove the reference home?
Don't think so. Shall we hit the review?
This week we turn to our good friend Robert Rotten. Is it Rotten or Rotten?
Doesn't matter, man.
Must be Rotten. I should probably ask
Rotten.
Him.
Yeah, Laramie Movie Scope.
God, the Laramie Movie. This guy has done a lot of reviews. And on top of this, a lot of these reviews are in the 90s. So this was done on October 12th of 90s.
I love how his website still has the 90s sheen with the little animated popping corn gif and the kind of the shitty HTML sort of clip art in it.
There's
nice.
Like some color added. You know, somebody hand typed in the ASCII color code for it.
Yeah.
I like it. I think you know what? I hate responsive design. Responsive design can go fuck itself.
I don't even know what that is, but I hate it too.
Okay, so he goes, starts with talking about Stallone's career a little bit, saying that the film Oscar was underappreciated. Have you ever seen that?
No.
I think isn't it the one where there's like a precocious girl in it, and he plays sort of like a Daddy Warbucks type character?
I think you're right. I think it's like a
family comedy sort of thing.
That's in the arcana of my pop culture knowledge. I have not a clue.
No,
I remember
it. I don't think it's considered to be a good film, but I guess Rotten liked it. Then he goes on to compare this movie to the likes of RoboCop and Back to the Future. I don't know if Back to the Future is really... Maybe 2? I don't think 2 was very good, though.
No.
I don't think it's a very good comparison. I mean, what's comparable about the...
I'm just going to say this. There's the one successful movie, the trilogy... Where there's one successful movie, and then there's two subsequent movies that are made at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Back to the Future 3 is pretty good.
You think?
I really enjoy that movie, yeah.
So I think of like a few films that fall into this. Back to the Future 2 and 3 filmed at the same time. Mm-hmm. Matrix 2 and 3 filmed at the same time.
I sort of like the Matrix sequels. I guess I'm aware.
Really? You like the Matrix sequels?
I like them, yeah.
The Pirates of the Caribbean 2 and 3.
Well, I think I fell asleep during the second movie. I never watched any of the other ones.
I don't know. It just
first movie was good though, huh? It was a fun
movie. It just seems
how old do your kids have to be till you watch that first Pirates movie?
I don't know. Whenever it's just like whenever they pay attention to it.
I don't know, because, I think the problem with my older brother's kids are a little older than yours, right? He has two daughters, too.
Yeah.
Separation in the age is about the same. But they're like, 4 years older than yours or something. I don't know.
Okay.
Anyways, he's got to be really careful because they get all worked up when a movie is too exciting and there's too much tension.
What?
Yeah, whenever a movie has a lot of tension, his kids like start crying. So watch out for that in the future.
That's weird. Is that like a little girl thing?
I don't know. Maybe kids are really sensitive to tension. Just when like there's tension in the plot, it really gets at him. He says he's got to watch it. Otherwise, they get all worked up.
Like what? Like what kind of tension? What kind of moment or piece in a film?
I don't know. They couldn't make it all the way through Human Centipede, so I don't know what to do.
Oh.
No, I'm joking.
That's a parenting problem right there. I don't think that has to do with anything.
No, I mean,
them.
Like, even some kids' movies are a little too tense at times. It could be a little much for them.
I cried during Snow White when I was shown it when I was a kid, and I haven't a clue why.
Mm. Other than
the fucking witch is menacing still, but I don't remember why I cried. Anyway.
I don't remember what the story is. That's not Sleeping Beauty, is it? What's the story of Snow White?
Is Snow White Sleeping Beauty? No, Snow White is Snow White, and Sleeping Beauty is Sleeping Beauty.
They're all rotoscoped chicks from the God knows when.
I'll have to run sociological experiments on film for my. I was like, okay, we're gonna watch the films I watched when I was your age. We're gonna watch Road Warrior, Alien, at the age of 6 or 7 or however.
National Lampoon's The Rise of Taj.
Or is that no Van Wilder?
Oh, it's Van Wilder, The Rise of Taj.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. So, but I think when he says that the like RoboCop, Demolition Man is a successful marriage of humor and action. I think he's right there, and also social commentary, though it's not as biting. Right. Let's see here, and we didn't really talk about the social commentary as much. This little PC business. Right.
Well, and
I'm surprised. I thought we'd bring it up at some point. We never really talked about it.
Well, it's you've seen it before, kind of. I mean, there's been many utopia dystopia film stories about, you know, sanitized. I think this was done humorously, which was kind of fun. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of times it's done like, you know, like there's something dark and sinister under the glossy sheen of this here utopia.
Well, there
what,
is.
What could it be?
In this movie.
Literally, right? But I don't think it's anything new. It's just kind of played on a little bit more for effect, which is fun. Hmm. So, you know,
I enjoyed it. I always like making fun of people who are, you know, PC. But that's just because I'm getting to turn into a really old curmudgeon-y guy.
I'm getting. Oh man, I don't even want to get into it. I feel like an old. Maybe it's part of my Eisenhower love, but to use a pejorative, the online social justice warrior crowd, you know, the social media vigilantes, you know, when some news story comes out about a particular incident and it gets blown completely out of the water, out of proportion. Mm-hmm. You know, to death threat DEFCON, and
yeah, everybody's like, who are these people sending people death threat emails? Who the fuck
well,
does
and
that?
That, and who's writing, you know, worse, I'll say this, worse, who's writing like 4,000 word diatribes on their blog about it?
I know, you know, I think this is the thing where I think it's tough seeing other generations come behind you.
Is that
it's
what it
tough
is?
To see people that the world is new and they're full of passion about things that you figured out don't fucking matter. And it just gets under you. I have a feeling every generation goes through this feeling. They're going, why do these kids care about all this bullshit that doesn't matter? But yeah, I think every generation has to care about all this bullshit that doesn't matter.
Isn't that crazy?
I can't imagine that. I bet almost every generation feels this. I think we're at the point now, though, that our generation's whiny enough that we talk about it instead of just getting on with our lives.
You mean we
bitch
engage
about it.
With the younger generation's
and we bitch.
Zeal.
And we bitch and moan. I think maybe that's
like
the difference.
Jesus Christ.
Like in the past,
don't you realize
just keep smoking your camels and get back to driving your delivery truck.
Don't you realize the fucking Arctic Ocean just melted and you're bitching about some fucking court case that went south? And I was like, Jesus Christ, people. You know, I mean, that's kind of my thing. I was like, let's put the whole goddamn human condition in perspective, you know. For starters, we're a multicellular organism, and to even get to that point, it's a fucking miracle of coincidence. And what are you niggling about? You know, just to me, that this kind of seems the point. I was actually in Victoria this past weekend, the weekend before, and my daughter and I, we went to a grocery store. My daughter's like three, and walked by like a, you call them convalescence homes. What do you call the old, really old people homes?
Old folks homes. Sometimes they're called nursing homes. Sometimes they're called skilled nursing facilities. Depending on their size, they can be called adult family homes.
So this was in Canada, so I'm assuming
it's
whatever.
How many people live there?
I'd see maybe like 30.
It'd probably be considered a skilled nursing facility.
Anyway, and you know how they wheel, like,
or if it wasn't a, it might have been a retirement community.
Yeah.
Was it more like that? Like everybody has something. Their own apartment.
And so we were walking along in the sidewalk, and there was a dude in a wheelchair just sitting there, and he'd been wheeled out. I mean, he was obviously
He's out of it.
Well, he was sitting there. No, he was alive, but he was sitting there. And his, have you ever seen that fucking painting with the? God damn it! It's like a Spanish painting with a little abstract with the guy's head like kind of bent over and in exhaustion or whatever. You know what I'm talking about?
Do you have your mic on your chest? I'm trying to picture.
No, I don't have enough space on my desk. It just fell in my lap.
You have your mic on your chest.
Well, it yeah. No, I don't.
Oh,
no,
I just picture you leaning back in your desk chair. I'm leaning way back right now myself.
Oh, look at you. All right.
Spanish
anyway.
Painting old man head.
I don't know.
Let's see what it comes up with here, man.
I'm going to try to find this.
Images. And okay, it's like, on. It's sort of, is it abstract?
Yeah, it's a little abstract.
Let me add that. Abstract.
It's really famous. God damn it! I can't find it.
I don't see it either.
All right, I'll post it on the goddamn Facebook. But anyway,
he was
hunched over and bent, and his neck was in a really weird position that only like a really old person who has like no muscle mass would find.
Well, it could be. He could have like a. You get all sorts of bone disorders that makes your spine curve.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it looked like his skeleton was propped up by, you know, like ad hoc provisional, like kind of, I don't know, sticks or something. I mean, he was just crunched over, and he was inanimate. He just was sitting there, but he was sitting up, but he was totally inanimate, right? Yeah. And he must have been like 85, 90. I don't know.
Yeah, it's something at that point.
And I was just like looking at him, and I was thinking, like, you know, how do I view this old person? He's more or less sort of a sidewalk hazard that I have to like move around. Mm-hmm. But there's a dude in there, right? I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. He still is cognizant. He still has, a brain that's sitting in there, and but I'm like, I think this is what happens when you just literally the last shit you have to give has left you. There's no more shits to give, and you're just this is what happens to you physically when you've run out of shits to give, you know. And I was like, that makes sense now. I think I understand old age. It's that point where you just like, I don't give, I just, all you fuckers, all you fucking little ants crawling around this ball, you know, it's like the nadir of nihilism or something. It's just gotten him to that point, you know? And so like, I'm kind of there. I think I understand the progression of, you know, giving a shit. And so when I find people reacting to issues that I think are pointless, it just turns me into a crotchety old asshole, you know?
I think you got to fight against it. You're not talking about that painting of the old guitarist, are you?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay.
That's it. Which one's
by
that
Picasso.
One? Oh, Picasso did that one?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, let me look it up. Picasso. Typing it in right now. Yeah. Okay. That's it. Mark coming up with it.
Well, anyways, luckily you were talking there for quite a while. What's it like for an old person?
That's what
you should
ask
him.
That's what
it's not
like
a lot of fun.
No, it's
it sort of blows.
Yeah, I imagine.
That's my take home from talking to a few old people about the situation.
All right. Sorry for the diet.
No, that's okay. I mean, it's an important question to ask. I think the earlier in life you ask that question, the more time you have to be depressed for the rest of your life.
I'm glad I'm not alone in this feeling, that you've confirmed my feelings towards giving a shit about, you know, reactionary online bullshit.
I don't dismiss giving a shit about this stuff. I think it's important for young people. And cultures do change, and they change from generation to generation because that generation gives a shit about all these little details and puts the energy into it, and it pushes society in a direction for good or ill. So I don't think it's pointless.
I guess it's
not pointless, but God, there's not much of a point.
I guess I'm very regretful that giving a shit was so ephemeral in my life.
I think that's the more important thing. I think that's the more poignant feeling, yes.
I remember when I was actually at your apartment and you lived in Seattle. Mm. And I was thumbing through Chomsky's What Uncle Sam Really Wants.
Yeah, like I wouldn't even be interested in reading Chomsky right now. But
I've waned. Like, mm-hmm. I'll still get things on my Facebook, you know, where he says seemingly crazy shit, but it's he's a little senile now. I don't know if a lot of it's, you know, totally coherent, and he repeats himself a lot.
He's really getting up there.
But I you know, when I read that What Uncle Sam Really Wants, like, my jaw dropped. I was like 21, 27 or something, you know, and dead rock star age, and I was just like losing my shit. And then I had to read all the Chomsky, and, you know, then I was like, oh, it's bullshit, you know, the system's rigged, and the mm-hmm. fucking is just blah 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 blah.
Well, none
you
of
know,
that's changed. The system is rigged.
No, none of it's changed, but there's been what do you call
it? You just
the,
don't care
levels,
as much.
The levels of grief, and I've just gotten right to the acceptance part.
It's like it's more about, like, I'm just gonna try to raise my kids.
I'm just gonna try to hope that
you raise a couple
there won't
of non
be barbarians a la the fucking Walking Dead coming down my street in my lifetime. I'm just kind of hoping that's not going to happen. I'm keeping my fingers crossed that, you know, there won't be a conflagration. There won't be
a band of gypsies isn't going to throw you out of your house.
Yeah, just hoping,
yeah.
Right? That keep my head below the waves, yeah. and whatever.
Uh-huh.
So anyway, so for all our young listeners, it gets better as it gets worse, I guess. Maybe that's
I think it's tough to put qualifiers on it like that. It certainly changes.
It does.
I think that's an important thing to keep in mind. As far as the rest of Roten's review, he just compliments Snipes' performance, which I think was really good. I thought everybody's performance was really good. And he just mentions that the romance was pretty dumb.
Yeah,
and that's it.
Next week, Mr. Hudson, we're going... Well, next time. God, we're so fucking intermittent these days. Next time.
So be it.
Is going to be 1976.
Was that film... Was that 76, huh?
I have seen it, and I don't know if I necessarily remember a lot about it, although it's one of those kind of mind blowers. And I think it's a prescient film. It's very prescient, and obviously it's within the context of the 70s, so maybe technologically it's a little bit limited.
Well, I think it's a way to appreciate that some of these ideas aren't exactly new, and even though you might feel that some things are unique to your generation, the previous generation had
right,
maybe
but
slightly
I
different color of the same thing.
And it's been so long, but I think it predicts a lot of things like reality TV culture, sensationalism, mm-hmm. gonzo journalism. Mm-hmm. The stuff that...
News entertainment.
News entertainment and exploitation mm-hmm. of our news organizations mm-hmm. in a way that was... People weren't aware of at the time. I think it had been going on, but mm-hmm. but network definitely highlighted the as Noam Chomsky would say, the manufacturing of consent by mass media. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, at least the money aspect of it. So
yeah, maybe. I mean, at least you can enjoy it with open eyes for the theater it is.
Yeah, so
though I don't really watch much of that shit any longer.
I don't either, but I wanted to watch it again, and I think it's a good film.
No, I think it's one of those, you know, as we've talked about the 70s, I think that was like the, you know, that's when it finally all came together, right, for film.
It did.
The technique basically was perfected.
Right.
And here you see the masters, the first generation of masters at work.
Well, and it was pre-high concept, which was nice because each film wasn't packaged in a marketing blowout kind of thing. There wasn't any fucking kids cereals after Network. You know, I mean, it had the cereal?
I mean, maybe the action figures and the diorama.
but it wasn't.
Network the endless running game for your iPhone or Android.
And Network the board game. Yeah, right. There's a few seminal parts of the film, like Ned Beatty's speech in the boardroom, mm-hmm. which is good. Faye Dunaway's performance is awesome, and she was hot. Oh, fuck, she was hot in the 70s. Goddamn. So next week we'll be reviewing Network, or next time, and until then.
I don't know. Lately I just don't feel like there's anything special about me.
You are an incredibly sensitive man who inspires joy feelings in all those around you.